This netcast is brought to you by the 8 Days of Geek Network.
All of your ears are belong to us.
On this episode of Error Code 8, we cover CES 2012. We've got ultrabooks, smartphones, and tablets. The best of the best coming straight to you. Stay tuned. This is Error Code 8. You've tuned back in this week to hear me, your host, Jesse Miller, and my co-host, the man of the hour, the techno kilt guy, Sam Briggs.
Hello, everyone, and yes, I do wear kilts.
Hey, by the way, okay, if you wear a kilt, I know Irish is Gaelic. What is... kilts are Scottish, right? Or are they Irish? They're Irish, too, right? They're both.
Right. That whole area, the Isle of Man, okay. Welsh.
And you,
each region has its own type of kilt and general background for the design of the kilt.
And which one are you going with? You're Irish.
I'm of Scottish descent.
Scottish. Okay. Does Gaelic cover all of those?
Technically, yes.
Okay. You are now the techno Gaelic. You have hereby been christened. All right, because you know you got the techno Viking, so
this is true.
Now we have a techno Gaelic. That's no brainer.
I kind of like the techno Scots. That sounds good too.
Nice. Sounds like a nice throw off of see. This is what happens when I podcast after a week of being, like, deathly ill. As I come back, pardon me, see? And I have absolutely nothing in my head. The band that played all the music for the Tron soundtrack.
Oh.
Exactly! I listened to Daft Punk. Whew.
Yeah.
That was about to make my brain bleed. All right, anyway, way off topic. The main topic for this episode, and pretty much the only topic, because every piece of news comes out of CES, and after CES, it's like a barren wasteland. So, we're going to cover some CES stuff. We've got three main categories we're going to go through. Now, Sam, let me ask you this. In every single CES to date, there has been a story. There has been one thing that has taken over the entire CES floor. Everybody has it. Everybody wants it. It's the greatest new thing that's going to be coming out. You know, it's top of the line. It takes over the entire newsreel. What was that this year? I couldn't honestly come up with anything.
I know. This is definitely the first year we've seen with... Well, everything was kind of spoiled beforehand. There was a lot of spoiling beforehand. But what's more is we're seeing a lot of companies kind of group together following Intel's, like, their Ultrabook standards. And we're now seeing Android 4.0 smartphones and tablets that all follow Google standards. The fact is that, yeah, there definitely was not one device that really stole the show. I mean, the best in show was a TV by LG. You know, and that's pretty sad whenever a TV wins best in a show.
Exactly. And there were a lot of TVs. Now, it's one of those things where you can go into display technologies till you're blue in the face. But frankly, a TV is a TV for the most part. Smart TVs were kind of a big thing this year, not Google TVs.
And the TV that won wasn't even a smart TV. Technically.
Exactly. And there is LG, I believe it's LG, is putting out a TV that has Android powering it. And it does, you
Correct.
Know, apps and different things like that. But, you know,
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those things where, yeah, these smart TVs are cool. They're a neat idea. But TVs are so cheap and so, you know, they upgrade so fast. I don't know if I want a TV that's a smart TV. I would rather have a good flat screen TV with an amazing screen and no brains, and then plug a box into it to get all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. And, well, I don't even own a TV, so that should say my stance on that.
There you go. The Techno Gaelic has no TV.
Nope, I have a my cell phone and my touchpad and my computer serve every purpose I have ever needed them to.
That's a good point. I plug my MacBook Pro into my TV a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, since we couldn't come up with a story for CES, that's why we have the categories. They're spread across three different categories. The first one we're going to hit is the Ultrabooks. Now, this was kind of the newest idea coming out of CES, are these Ultrabooks, these ridiculously thin, full-power laptops. Now, there were a couple of them, obviously. They kind of take off to me. I'm a Mac user, and they kind of feel like they're just taking off of the MacBook Air's coattails. Because, you know, full-powered laptop, small, blah, 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 blah. Now, the let's see, first one we've got on our list is Acer's S5. It's, you know, I mean, all these are, they pretty much all have, most of them have the same gimmick. Thin, mm-hmm. full power, good battery life, and fast. You know, the Acer is a 13.3-inch. It's instantly supposed to instantly turn on Thunderbolt, SSD. You know, it's 15 millimeters thick, which is that's pretty intense. It's not going to cut a block of cheese, but it's pretty intense. Which, if I remember right, what was the last gadget to cut a block of cheese? I think the MacBook Air might have been used to do that at one point. I know when it first came out, the Palm Pre, the little lip on the bottom, they used that to cut cheese.
Yep.
So, but
hey, I have occasionally used it for that purpose. I'm still using a Palm Pre.
That is so just dual purpose. I want gadgets that can cut cheese.
Well, yeah, and you forget that the Palm Pre also has a mirror on the back of it, so that you can check to make sure, for people like me who have a massive beard, you have not gotten the cheese in your beard.
This is perfect. Man, that is exactly what Palm had in mind. See, we misinterpreted the gadget. That's why it didn't sell. It wasn't a smartphone. It was a cheese cutter with a mirror.
Yes. Instead of trying to sell it to soccer moms, they should have sold it to lumberjacks and Scotsmen and Vikings.
Yeah.
Would have been great.
Dang. Palm, you should have saw that one coming. All right. Dell also released one, the XPS 13. It's 18, let's see here, it actually tapers. So it's kind of like the MacBook Air, it's bigger on one edge. Yeah, I know, I don't like that either. It's bigger on one edge than the other, like the MacBook Air. It's 18 to 6 millimeters, made of aluminum and carbon fiber, which is actually kind of cool. The entry-level one, this is going to be customizable. It'll have a Core i5 processor, 128 gigabyte SSD, 4 gigs of RAM, backlit keyboard. Not enough computers have those. Those are really great. And it's actually going to be about $1,000 to start. So, a little steep, but you get a lot of... a Core i5, 4 gigs of RAM, that's nothing to really scoff at. That's not a bad laptop.
The thing is that... And I feel this way about all of these Ultrabooks, is that the specs feel so last year. Last year we had i5s. Last year we had laptops with 4 gigabytes of RAM. The amazing thing here is the 128 gigabyte solid state drive. That's nice. But we're not seeing I guess that's another issue this year with CES, is that we're not seeing the leaps and bounds in the processors like we did last year.
Yeah, that's very true. There are.
It was last year that they released the i-series, right?
Weren't
they announced that?
I believe. It was either last year. No, it was last year, because the MacBooks just upgraded to them at the beginning of last year, I think.
That's right.
I think.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. The processors are so hard to keep track of because of all the names, you know? I mean, names are getting ridiculous nowadays. Sandy Bridge. There was a new one.
You have Sandy Bridge.
I can't remember what it's called. It's a brand new one just coming out.
For AMD?
I don't know. Cloverfield. We'll go with that.
Well, AMD's got the Trinity that is coming up. Those are accelerated processing units. But, yeah, there's a lot of crazy names. A lot of crazy names.
Pine Trail, I think. Is that it?
Oh, yeah, there's...
you can just... That's the problem. Ivy Bridge. Found it. Whew. Hey, that's really close, actually, if you think about that. Pine Trail, Ivy Bridge. Woohoo! Yeah, so that's...
You take the Pine Trail to get to the Ivy Bridge.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Exactly. And then to grandma's house you go. where grandma's using an iPad.
and cutting cheese with it.
Exactly. That you could probably cut cheese with an iPad.
There's an app for that.
And that
lots of apps for that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The fart app.
Steve Jobs said no more apps for that.
Now, see, that is one of the problems I've always found with processors, is the fact that all the names are so ridiculous that it's just... You can put two words together, have a processor name. I guarantee you that's probably what they do.
Like gingerbread and ice cream sandwich. Those aren't ridiculous at all.
Well, they're all desserts. they're desserts, okay, and they're right, in...
So theme.
Yeah, they're desserts, and they're in alphabetical order. So technically, there's two.
Well, Pine Trail, you know, Ivy Bridge, those are...
I'm gonna keep thinking it's Pine Trail from now on.
Plant Roads.
All right. The next one on our list is actually what I consider the prettiest of all of them. That is HP's MV14 Spectre. Could have shortened the name. That's okay. this is considered a premium ultrabook. Woohoo! $1,400. It's got glass on the top of it, so it's asking to be broken, but that makes it pretty. It's like, I mean, it looks gorgeous.
It is Gorilla Glass.
That's true. Well, we can hope.
It's going to be tough. Not as tough as concrete. Don't drop it.
Yeah. It's going to weigh 3.79 pounds. It's a little heavy, but I think it's probably because of that glass. But you know what? I want some heft in my laptop. Because what if I have to beat down somebody with it, you know? I mean, it's going to be 20 millimeters, which kind of, you know, makes it larger than all the rest. But, you know, what can you do?
It is the heaviest and largest of them, but it still falls in the standard, barely.
Exactly.
It still falls in the standard for Ultrabook.
Now, it also, one thing I think is really interesting. Now, this is one of those things not many people use. I have a Nexus S, so I use it. It has NFC in the palm rest.
Mm-hmm.
That is so cool, because then you can just set your phone there and beam over a contact. You know, or beam over a website that you want to take with you on your phone. That opens up a whole lot of little possibilities. Now, our next one on the list, and this is the last one, is one we already covered. It's the Lenovo's IdeaPad Yoga. It's the computer that actually folds over on itself backwards, like literally bends over backwards, to become a tablet. Now, I still, after seeing this thing in action, seeing it work, I'm still not 100% sold on the idea of the, you know, well, the way they have it flip over. It's 17 millimeters thick. It's 16 by 900 IPS multi-touch display. That display is going to be gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's going to be about $1,000, Windows 8, you know, the whole thing. But one thing I am worried about... I mean, when you turn it over backwards and you turn it into a tablet, the keyboard is showing. Now, the keyboard and touchpad turn off, so you don't accidentally touch buttons. But if you have to set this thing down like that, you're going to get grit and grime, and, you know, you're going to sit it in somebody's little cup circle, and all this nasty stuff's going to get all over the keyboard. That kind of worries me.
Mm-hmm.
Especially on a $1,000 laptop.
That's why in every picture you see it folded back like that and it's being used as a tablet, if it's not being held, it's sitting like a tent.
Yeah, it looks like an easel.
Right. And that's the way they're pitching it, because I'm going to assume the last hour of development, somebody actually probably sat it down in a you know, a little circle of water in from somebody's cup, and they're like, oh, no.
Yeah. All of a sudden, our number one prototype bursts into flames.
Right. Awesome. So that's why I'm going to assume the whole tint stance. They could have just had a raised bevel on the outside of the keyboard, and that would have taken care of almost all the problem, but they didn't.
Would have ruined the aesthetics of it.
Right.
All right, no, those are the Ultrabooks. I don't know. Color me not impressed, really, because
some of them are creeping really close to the price of the low-end MacBook, and at that point in time, none of them come close to even the low-end MacBook's, you know, specs. You know, you're going to, you know, a MacBook with, you know, that operating system is going to run faster, smoother, with lower hardware than a Windows computer. So at that point in time, if you're really interested in one of these, one of the higher end ones like the Spectre, look at a MacBook.
This is true. And I say this to many people.
Yeah, I've never said that before in my life.
Yeah. Well,
now if you're interested in, you know, sadly, none of these laptops this year really were aimed at the true market. Most people are going to spend between $300 and $600 on a laptop. And or they're going to wait for these to go on sale at Best Buy during Christmas or somewhere and very pick true. One up then. So
very
different market.
Very true. All right. Our next on the docket is smartphones from CES. I honestly, there was last year, if I remember right, was kind of the year for Android smartphones. This year, surprisingly, this actually came out of left field for me. Windows Phone has made a reappearance. And to be completely honest, the hardware doesn't look bad. Now, let's see here. A lot of LTE. A whole lot of LTE coming out.
Mm-hmm.
HTC is the first one on our list. They came out with a new phone called the Titan 2. It's a refresh on the original Titan. It supports AT&T's LTE. It'll have Microsoft's new Mango OS, so it's the newest version of Windows Phone. It's a little beefier on the camera. It's 4.7 inches. That's pretty interesting. 16 megapixel camera with, for you photographers out there, a f/2.6 lens. That is a pretty wide aperture, so you can get some really good low light shots. Really fast lens, you know, it'll be able to stop action. Now, Sam, we had this discussion earlier. I said you don't need anything more than an 8-megapixel camera. What do you think about the 16 megapixels coming out in the Titan 2?
I want to see it in person first to make sure that the lens and that the other hardware is really going to, and the software can support a megapixel of that size, since that plays a large role in all these. But, you know, like I said last time, we're seeing more and more people replace their digital cameras, not their SLRs, but their digital cameras with cell phones. So if this takes good pictures and has a fast lens and has a lot of options, I mean, Android has a lot of apps. We'll see if Windows Phone develops a lot of apps for the camera. If so, then this is the phone, and this HTC is making a play to get that the digital camera market, and, you know, try to snuff that out while I can. I want to see the pictures. If it takes good pictures, then I'm sold on it over the Lumia 900.
And the Lumia 900 from Nokia is actually the next one on our list. Flawless.
Indeed.
Segue. This LTE packing little wonder actually kind of surprised me, to be honest. I did not at first think this was a good-looking phone when it was first announced overseas. Seeing this one now, especially in black, it's actually a pretty good-looking piece of hardware. I haven't held it, so I don't know what it feels like. It's supposedly, I think, polycarbonate all around. But
yes,
it's still
solid piece.
It looks pretty good. The Lumina 900 is, 4.3-inch screen. It's Nokia hardware, which also means I believe it has a Carl Zeiss lens on it.
That is correct.
That is good glass, as we in the photography world say it. That is really good glass. So you're going to get some clear pictures out of this camera, hopefully. It's dual core. So, you know, that if you liked Nokia in the past, they're still making pretty good hardware. Their software has been crap for a while, but their hardware is pretty good. So now that they're using someone else's software, you know, might give them a shot. You never know.
Oh, and I like Windows Phone 7. It's simple. The ones that I've sold, or that whenever I worked in retail before that I've sold, they didn't come back. If they did come back, it's because they got peer pressured into getting an Android or an iPhone, because that's what their friends had. You don't see a lot of crashes. You don't have any major issues. No offense, but when Android, up until 2.3, Android was a pain to sell. Lots of crashes and a lot of inconsistency. You never really had that problem with the Windows Phone, except for the SD card. We'll just pretend that never happened.
Yeah,
it's whenever my Palm Pre finally dies, I'm looking at getting a Windows Phone. It's definitely, they're making leaps and bounds. And by the time Windows 8, well, I'll give up my Palm Pre by the time Windows 8 is out. Wow. So by then we'll see if it's whether or not Microsoft is really in it for the long haul.
I so would have pegged you as an Android guy.
My issue with Android is just the amount and the crazy level of, what's the word?
Fragmentation?
Yes.
Everybody uses the F word with Android.
Yeah, and it's something that's getting steadily worse. You have Google Core, you have each carrier's version of Android that the manufacturers have to, or the hardware manufacturers have to work with, combined with skins on top of that. And then when you go into the homebrew, the community side of it, to install your own version of it, you get a lot of people's either half-baked or nearly baked versions, sometimes with a skin, sometimes without. It's very hard, actually, with Android. It's almost impossible to take all the best features of all of them and have one good operating system. That's not happening. We're not seeing that happen. Microsoft actually works with a group of hackers on Windows Phone 7 to ensure that there is one set way of unlocking that's safe. Microsoft's stance on that is excellent. So,
alrighty. And
I don't think we've ever talked about the Microsoft hacking community, but it's still there. So,
and they're about to get a whole lot of new toys to play with.
Obviously. Oh, beautiful toys.
All right. See, next one on our list. This one was interesting for me, not because of anything outside particularly, but inside. The Lenovo K800. This one is going to be the first smartphone with an Intel processor in it. It's going to be having, here's one of those funky names, Intel's Medfield. I'm just going to say it how it looks. Medfield chip. Now, the K800 is going to be very customized Android. So, yeah, you know, same thing we've seen. 4.5-inch display that's set at 720p. Not bad. Gingerbread, which is kind of... I don't know about that with ice cream sandwich coming out. It had better be able to upgrade. 8-megapixel rear camera. I don't know. Every spec on this phone is blah, except for the fact that it has an Intel chip. Now, with this Intel chip, what I want to know is, what do we have with battery life? Because, you know, all these mobile processor manufacturers focus on battery life first, speed second. And Intel, obviously, you know, they're a computer chip manufacturer. Speed first, power second. I see a phone with a 5-hour battery life.
More than likely.
I hope they prove me wrong, but that's just what I see. I'm calling them like I see them.
Yeah. The nice thing about this is that for the homebrew community, That's a little bit of pre-built drivers to get Android up and running on Intel processors, and that's great for the homebrew community to get it running on other devices.
Very true. Hmm. Good stuff.
Yes.
This one, we've seen you know, things about this all over the web for last, I guess, 6 months, give or take. The Asus Padfone. It's one of those things that comes along that's meant to simplify your life, and I don't honestly know how it does it, but I'm sure somebody will find a way. It's a phone, okay, 4.3-inch handset, the same thing that you've seen a billion different times, running Ice Cream Sandwich. Now, what's fun is that it also comes with a tablet. Woo! Two devices. No, one device. You open a door in the back of the tablet, dock the phone, shut the door, and the phone's display gets transferred to the tablet's display. The tablet is basically a dumb device with a battery. Now, it does have an extra battery in it, so this could be a place to charge your phone while you're not using it, and still be able to use all of its features. Interesting, yes, but I don't know if it's... I mean, I don't understand why you would have a problem. You know, one of their big marketing things is it's for people who don't want to carry around a phone and a tablet. But the tablet dock is the exact same size as a tablet. So you're still carrying around a tablet. The only problem is you can't use both of them at once.
Right.
Dumb. I don't like it.
Nope.
I it's solving a problem I don't honestly think exists.
I agree.
If people don't want to carry around a tablet and a phone, then just carry around one. Carry around a tablet or a phone. If you have to have, you know, if you say, oh, well, if I carry a tablet, I don't have a phone, go for something like the Galaxy Note. I believe it's a 7-inch tablet that is also a phone.
Well, who has problems carrying a phone? Who has ever had problems carrying a cell phone? They've been out for 20 years now. They're no longer things that you mount into your vehicle. You slip it into a pocket.
You don't have to carry a bag.
Yeah. The fact is that if you're wanting to use a tablet, then obviously you will find a way to carry it around. I don't see... I mean, I just don't see who has problems carrying around a cell phone. If carrying around a tablet is an issue, then instead of an innovation like this, we need to see those flexible screen displays. We need to see more advances in those type of technologies to make them more portable and make them less rigid.
All right. Let's see here. We've got two more Xperia phones. Woohoo. The Sony Xperia Ion, which is it's pretty interesting. Now you will notice it is Sony, not Sony Ericsson. Sony has completely gotten rid of the Ericsson thing. Now it's the Ion is a Japanese phone right now, of course, but you know everything is a Japanese phone at first. Mm-hmm. It's a 4.6-inch screen at 720p, AT&T LTE. And a dual-core 1.5 gigahertz CPU. Looks interesting. It's Android, obviously. I don't know. I don't know. Just looking at it, it's kind of blah.
Yep.
The one that
Sony has done a great job of making itself not stick out again.
Exactly. The one that does look good out of the two phones is the Sony Xperia S. A little bit more, I don't know, a little more utilitarian, kind of out there. I kind of like it.
Are those two rows of buttons?
Yes. It does look that way, does it not?
Yeah.
Now,
that's confusing.
I love it. I don't know why I love it, but I do. Now, what it is here is we've got, once again, only Sony, not Sony Ericsson. Full touchscreen, running Ice Cream Sandwich, so it has a home bar. However, underneath is a little transparent bar, and yes, if you look at it, it is actually transparent. How cool is that? And in the transparent bar, you have the back button, a home button, and a menu button. And the actual bar itself is also the antenna. It is actually a cool looking phone.
Well, at least it's in a place where your hand won't cover it, and you'll have horrible dropped calls.
Yeah, you're holding it wrong. All right. Yeah. So there you go. Those are smartphones that came out of CES.
It looks interesting. I mean, I like the. It's very vibrant looking. It's vibrant looking device.
Yeah, I know, right?
Mm-hmm. But other than that, I still. Beyond just the very unique design of it, it doesn't stick out. Like, I don't see, as tech geeks, it's cool. As a consumer marketable device, I still don't see it.
As a consumer, I honestly, I don't know. I hate to say it. As a tech geek, I love all the Android phones that were coming out. As a consumer, I have to say, Windows Phone doesn't look bad. You know, depending on the price points they set.
The numbers are getting bigger. I hate to say that, but yeah, the fact is that the Windows Phone devices are coming out with bigger looking numbers, and that plays a huge role in what sells.
Yeah, it does. And that's unfortunate.
I know.
I can honestly say you have to put in some amazing features for me to buy a phone that is more than $200 on contract.
Mm-hmm.
That is like the theoretical max of an on-contract cell phone for me.
I have never bought a cell phone on contract.
Congratulations.
I know. And I have thrown away thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. we figure I started off with the HTC Touch Pro 2, and that would have been $549. I think I got it for like $479 or something like that.
Whew.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's a little rough.
Yeah, I found that. Thankfully, I got the Palm Pre out of a trash can.
Yes,
so,
well, somebody found out that it wasn't a cell phone. It was a cheese cutter with a mirror, and
they weren't a lumberjack, Viking, or Scotsman. So
exactly.
They got
all right. Our next and last section for CES is tablets. These we had a lot of. We're going to try and run through this section relatively quick because we're starting to run a little long here. We've already talked about a couple of these. The Acer Iconia Tab A510 will be an upgraded version of the A500, obviously. Numbers mean something. It's a 1.3 gigahertz quad-core Tegra 3, gig of RAM. You know, it's going to be running newest of the new. 1080p IPS quality display. Now, they say IPS quality, not IPS. Yeah. Now, it looks interesting. It will probably be Acer's budget tablet, which is good. We need those. We have to have budget tablets to get people into the tablet market. All right. Next one. This one is this one's actually in the running for my first actual tablet. Of course, the iPad is one of the ones in the running because it's in everybody's running regardless. The Transformer Prime, the model number is TF700T. I don't honestly think that matters to you, but we'll say it anyway. The Transformer Prime, we've been waiting for a while, is one of the very first tablets that was announced to have the Tegra 3. It'll have 1.3 gigahertz Tegra 3, 8 megapixel rear camera, 2 megapixel front. It'll come in 32 and 64-bit or gigabyte versions, running Ice Cream Sandwich from the factory. Now, it'll cost, this one's a little iffy. The 32 gig will cost $600. The 64 will be $700. I wish they had a 16 gig that was $5, but they don't. Of course, it will have, one of the things that's only come out for the Transformers, the little keyboard dock that they can slide into, lock into. It adds, two USB ports, full touchpad, full keyboard, and an extra 8 hours worth of battery life, and basically turns this little quad-core wonder into a netbook. All right.
Who's buying these devices? I'm just so confused. in regards to spec-wise and everything, again, just all these problems, they all look the same. How are people telling the difference between these?
You can't really.
That's what I'm coming down to, is that there's no way anyone actually knows the difference between the hardware on these.
Exactly. And there are a lot of times, like towards the end of the Honeycomb era, like last year, mm-hmm. I was literally saying at times, we have a new tablet. It's the exact same specs as everything else. Here's the price. I mean, these all are going to be coming out with exactly the same hardware. And I can't honestly tell you. I mean, the big thing that's going to decide for you is price, of course. Screens, because they all use a different display technology. I believe the Transformer Prime uses an IPS display, as the Transformer did before it. Those are unbelievably gorgeous displays. I mean, they're not expensive, but they are gorgeous. You know, very good resolutions. So your display technology is, of course, going to be a big thing. Your price, build quality. Because, for instance, the original Transformer, I almost bought, but I didn't, because the entire back of the device is plastic. Acer Iconia A500, most of the back of it is metal. However, the tablet itself is thick and heavy. So it's one of those things where they had the exact same hardware, but it was just little things that made it, you know, I didn't know which one was better. So, yeah, it's no one looks at the specs of these really anymore. Your size, your build quality, screen technology, and your price. Four factors that can pretty much decide what tablet you buy. And if you don't like Android, well, you're getting an iPad.
Yeah, true. Or you forget the Kindle.
That's true.
The Kindle Fire. I know it's an Android base, but the
Nook tablet too.
Oh, that's, yeah.
It's an tablet. Android base.
Yep. Actually, you're pretty much always getting an Android base.
Pretty much.
Even these aren't really coming with stock Android on them, so.
Mm. All right.
By the way, it seems that, just so for those listeners out there, almost every tablet this year is coming with an IPS display. So you can throw the screen display out the window when it comes to that.
And I think more of them should, because it's a fantastic display technology.
100% agree.
Mm. All right. This one's the Pantech Element. I have, once again, pretty much exactly the same spec sheet all the way across the board. It's an 8-inch tablet. Now, the front cameras will be a 5-megapixel. Or no, back cameras are 5. And the front camera is a 2. It's going to be going for a $300 price tag. I do believe that's on AT&T's network, because it is an AT&T branded device. Now, I think if you buy, I think there's a phone that comes out with this also that is kind of lackluster. I think it's $100 or $150 for the phone and $300 for the tablet. But if you buy both at the same time, you get it's $50 for the phone, $300 for the tablet. If you buy both at the same time from AT&T, they're saying that they're going to cost $250. So you get both of these for cheaper than the tablet by itself. But you also have 2 data plans. So that's why they're making it cheaper. It's because you're spending more in data.
Also note that the Pantech Element survives in 3 feet of water for 30 minutes without failure.
That's just... I don't know. I mean, are we
how do you make a feature? Yeah, I know.
This are we just is, pulling you know, features yeah. out of our butt now? I mean, honestly.
I guess this is great for people who live in New York and, you know, they're trying to get from one Starbucks to another and it's raining outside and they're waiting on a taxi and, you know, they're just standing there using their tablet in the rain.
If you really,
I don't know.
If you're really klutzy and just cannot keep from dropping your phone into the thunder bucket after you get done going... Just
true.
Buy the Pantech.
You know, if my touchpad could survive in toilet water for 30 minutes, you know, I don't know why it would take me that long to get it out, but
this is
I would
what
be
I'm
more
thinking.
Reassured.
I mean,
I would be more reassured to take it to the bathroom.
I have dropped one phone into water, and I swear that I grabbed it so fast that the tension on the top of the water hadn't even broken by the time I got to it. I don't know. Anyway, it survives in water, you know, so in case you decide to go, I don't know, diving. If you got me. If you're snorkeling in the Hudson, when you have you would have bigger problems than your phone dying. Hey, it'll work.
Yep.
All right. The last one on the list is the OLPC. That is the one laptop per child. It's the XO 3.0. It's a tablet. Originally, the one laptop per child obviously was a laptop. It kind of flopped. They weren't able to meet their price point. The OLPC XO 3.0, which is way too long of a name, let me tell you, is trying to hit a $100 price point. Now, these aren't obviously for sale to the general public. They're kind of a buy in bulk for your whatever foundation you have type deal. So they're also configurable, so they do go up from $100. Minimum specs are an 800 megahertz CPU, 1500 milliamp battery, 512 megabytes RAM, USB ports, 4 gigabytes of NAND storage, so that's apps and stuff. Now, the really cool thing that's interesting with these is the fact that they have, I believe it's a Marvel that makes a chipset in these, and they have an adaptive charging technology, which means, like the iPad, you have to have a specific amount of power going into the iPad 2 in order for it to charge at all. If you have even one single watt or volt lower than that, nothing. It won't charge, period. So with this, what it will do is it will actually take a charge from any power coming into it, regardless how much or how little it is, regulate it, and slap it into the battery. This means that they can be charged via a hand crank, which has, I believe what they said, is a 1 to 10 ratio, meaning crank...
10,
is it 10 to 1?
10 to 1. 10 minutes of use for every 1 minute of cranking.
There you go. Okay, so to every 1 minute you crank, you get 10 minutes of use. So that's pretty good. They also, on the cover, they have a solar panel to where you can plug it up using a solar panel if you want. These are going to be pretty interesting. They come with either Android or Strawberry Linux, which is a customized version of Linux put out by OLPC. You know, I mean, for tablets overseas and for, you know, underprivileged people, these are going to be great. Get them into the technology. Get them to where, you know, they are connected, and it'll make life a little easier. It'll make them be able to learn better. It'll make them be able to do all these different things. So, you know, we thought that one deserved a little bit of a mention, too.
Mm-hmm. Also, this is great for, as a personal educational laptop for your children. If you are interested in getting your kids learning in computers, tablets, and everything at a young age, this is definitely something to look at. Yeah, you probably need a little bit of Linux experience on your hands to be comfortable with it, but everybody should have Linux experience at one point in their life. So you'd be killing two birds with one stone there.
We're not all Matthew Broderick, you know.
Exactly.
All right, we ran a little long for the CES episode, but hey, that's what you get when you listen to a podcast that covers tech right after CES. You have any final thoughts on CES?
Well, with Microsoft being gone next year and Apple, of course, never partaking, to be completely honest, CES is really going to have to find a way of stepping up its game and or at least finding ways of getting more better venue set up, either go longer or something else like that, or organize it better. I feel like a lot of technology and a lot of things are getting drowned out, and that's why Microsoft backed out of it. It's why HP backed out of it last year for their after they acquired Palm, and they held their own Palm event or their own WebOS event. That was a flop, but still, we'll see more and more companies doing that in the future, I feel, if CES doesn't find a way to become more organized.
All right. And, really, I was underwhelmed by the different things that were at CES. However, the Windows phones are looking very interesting to me. I don't know if I'd be ready to swap over to a Windows phone yet. I'm still pretty hooked on Android. And, you know, to be honest, the iPhone 4S has been calling my name lately. Now, I'm not buying an iPhone 4S because I know the iPhone 5 will be coming out by the time I'm ready for a new phone. So I'm just going to kick it with my pure Google phone, my Nexus S4G. All right.
That's something for anyone interested in Windows Phone 7. Definitely check out the homebrew and the hacking community for it. The fact is that there is a ton of support there. So even if you don't like stock Windows Phone 7, there's actually a surprising amount you can do with it to enhance it and make it better.
Good stuff. All right. You want to real quick ramble off your info for everybody so they can find, follow, and stalk you?
Okay. I am the Manatee Man at Twitter, Manatee Man on Twitter. You can get me at Gmail at themanateeman@gmail.com. You can get me here at Sam Briggs at 8daysageek.com. I really need to start figuring out how I can track myself. I don't know everything I'm on. You can find me at another place I hang out a lot now is for the WebOS forums at PreCentral, or what is now Web. What is that? They changed their name. PreCentral.net is what I used to know them as.
There were entire moments in time where Sam just cannot find himself.
Yeah, this is true. Sometimes I just wake up and I'm at work and it's about time to clock off. I was like, that's weird. Well, I'm glad I woke up now.
Of all the times to wake up, it's a good one.
Yep.
All right. For me, my email address is jesse@8daysgeek.com. You can find me on Twitter at Pen of Doom. Of course, you can go to about.me/Jesse Miller and find all of my stuff. I'm on Google Plus. I'm on you name it. I'm on there. I think I just joined LinkedIn. I'm on everything. So why don't you just go to my about.me and you'll find it. If you want to call and leave a voicemail or send us a text message, the number to call or text is 754-273-6397. And for those of you still thinking about that Pantech pad phone, the Pantech phone that can go underwater and you can drop it in a crapper and be okay, that number is 754-273-6397. Right. I guess that's it for us tonight, man. We're going to go ahead and say goodbye to you all. So, Sam, say goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody.
And we hope you enjoyed this CES edition of Error Code 8. Join us next week. Hopefully, there will be a tech world left to report on.